The biggest breakup letter of all time. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Britain's ambassador to the European Union has hand-delivered a very important letter today to the EU saying it's over. This is a formality, but it means the separation of Britain and the EU has officially begun. The biggest next step is the actual hammering out of a new trading relationship between them. Who gets what access to whose markets? With more on this, we have the BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Andrew, who has the upper hand here?
It is hugely controversial. The short answer is that both sides do have significant interests that they can impinge on the other, which does give them some negotiating leverage. I think it's also worth adding that that whatever the economic incentives might be, there is a political issue, and that is that the European Union does appear to want to send a message that you can't have all the benefits of European Union membership without taking all the obligations. So the British side wants to reduce free movement of people, and I think there is certainly a desire on the part of at least some European leaders to say that if you do that, then you have to pay a price in terms of your access to European markets.
The UK is a net importer from some of Europe's biggest economies, France, Germany. Does that give it some kind of muscle in its negotiation?
That imbalance question was one of the arguments used by people supporting leave to suggest that Britain would be in a strong negotiating position. Others point out, however, if you look at exports to the other side, as it were, as a percentage of national income, actually, it's a much bigger deal for Britain than it is for the rest of the European Union. So the figures were of the order of 13% of GDP for British exports to the rest of the European Union, a figure more like 3-4% for exports to the UK as a percentage of GDP for the rest of the EU. So it could cut either way is the short answer.
Well, right, the UK's biggest export is financial services, biggest export to the EU. I mean, is that a major vulnerability for the UK going into these negotiations?
Certainly, there are some concerns that the UK might lose a little bit of its, London in particular, might lose a little bit of its luster as a international financial centre. But having said that, the extent of any loss of jobs to other parts of the European Union, if there is any, will be relatively small. And it must be said that access to London financial services is an important consideration for many non-financial businesses on the continent. So here again, we've got an area, I think, where some of the considerations of national interest are pulling in different directions.
The BBC's Andrew Walker. 200,000 people have died over the past 15 years because of addiction to opioid drugs. As many parts of the country struggle with this problem, lawmakers are trying to find out who or what is to blame. Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill is launching a probe of the opioid industry, asking leading pharmaceutical manufacturers to turn over internal studies that projected risks of misuse or of addiction to these painkillers. To talk about more of this, we have Dr. Caleb Alexander. He's co-director of Johns Hopkins Center for Drug Safety and Effectiveness.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So how much responsibility do the makers of these drugs bear for the fact that so many people abuse them?
Well, they bear considerable responsibility. These products have been heavily marketed and promoted, at times beyond the evidence base, and this has contributed to a perception that these products are actually safer than they really are.
But if doctors are the ones writing the prescriptions, surely they play a big role too?
Well, they do. I mean, this is a shared responsibility, and there's no single factor that one can point to that's fully responsible for the magnitude of injuries and deaths from prescription opioids. But the fact of the matter is that these products have been very aggressively marketed and promoted, and that's contributed to a perception that they're more effective and more safe than they really are.
It sounds like you're saying that the marketing has overtaken the science on this.
It's certainly true that for a long time, we've underestimated the addictive potential of these products. And if you look at the molecular structure of heroin and compare that to many prescription opioids, they're virtually indistinguishable. So we shouldn't be surprised that these products have a very high addictive potential.
Is there an obvious fix to this problem that everyone can agree on?
There is a very high correlation between the volume of opioids prescribed in the United States and the numbers of injuries and deaths from these products. What's remarkable is that while the prescription opioid epidemic is nearly 20 years old, the rates of injuries and deaths from these products continue to increase year after year. And in fact, we haven't seen very large reductions in the volume of prescription opioids on the market. So the two most important things that we can do as a society are to prescribe fewer prescription opioids and to identify and treat those with opioid addiction.
All right, Dr. Caleb Alexander is co-director of Johns Hopkins Center for Drug Safety and Effectiveness. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Wells Fargo has agreed to pay customers $110 million in a settlement over accounts opened without customers' permission. 2 million bank accounts and credit cards may have been created by bank employees trying to meet sales targets and increase their pay. Wells Fargo has since gotten rid of its employees' incentive system that authorities said encouraged workers to set up fake accounts. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.